Well, as usual, it's McCallum, it's Shannon, getting ready for the podcast for today.
Hey, I got a bone to pick.
Oh, right off the top?
Yeah, right now.
Go ahead.
Well, first of all, Tuesday, we had John Herdman on our show.
You did.
And boy, if you didn't know anything about soccer or didn't know anything about him, by the end of the 50 minutes, I think you were convinced he's a good guy and Canada's on the right track. I really do. I mean, it was, I don't know about you, Bob, but it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
A smart guy.
Yeah.
Guy who knows what he's doing. Has a pleasant way about him.
Yeah. And, master motivator. He'd be a good after dinner speaker for sure.
Oh yeah.
So here we are 24 hours from a game, against Costa Rica in Edmonton. I'm hearing and seeing nothing. I am hearing and seeing nothing from anyone. And we live in the biggest media market in the country. We should be talking, there should be people talking about this game, particularly after what we saw last month and the Panama game and the Alphonso Davies goal that you fell in love with. I'm flummoxed on this one. I don't understand why we're not more, and patriotic's not the right word because we are patriotic, but how we're not more invested in this team.
Well, I can't explain soccer people, of course.
Yeah, but they're invested.
Well, but even soccer people in the media.
Right.
The one thing I can perhaps deduce from this is that we played the first however many games, home games, in this tournament in Toronto, which is the largest city in this country and the media capital of this country. And so inevitably, when it's in Toronto, the Toronto media will pay some attention to it. Now we're in Edmonton.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that means anything. It shouldn't mean anything to the soccer people because...
Well, it shouldn't mean anything to the national networks either.
Well, but apparently it does.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the only conclusion I can come to.
Yeah.
We will see how many people show up in Edmonton.
Yeah, so there's the game Friday against Costa Rica and the game Tuesday against Mexico. So it's in Edmonton as well. So, but this is a big weekend for Soccer Canada. A big weekend.
Well, they all are, you know. I mean,
yeah. As Herdman told us, they're halfway through getting to the World Cup.
Yeah, every game is important. They you know, they can still blow this very easily. Although that is not my expectation. I don't think it's anybody's expectation. I think we've all been more than impressed by how this team has played.
Yeah.
And we think the prospects are pretty good.
Yeah.
The Costa Rica game, you know, you expect a win there. Mexico, I don't know what to expect.
Well, they drew.
But historically, Mexico is a significantly better side than Canada is.
Yeah.
Historically.
Right. Oh, they're usually in the top 15 of the world.
Yeah.
We're 48th right now. We're 48th.
Yeah, but that's historic information. It really, what we're talking about is how good is this Canadian team right now? And we don't know the answer to that yet. Yeah, we know they're a lot better than most of the sides that have represented this country, but we don't know how good.
Right.
And Mexico and the US are the real tests in this group.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'm excited.
Mexico on Tuesday.
I'm excited for both games, and I'm really excited about the watch party at your house. It's good. The Bob McCowan soccer watch party is the event of the year.
Well, I'll give you a little information you're not aware of. I believe the big ass TV in the family room is being installed today.
So the watch party, it could be like, we could be out onto the street with the watch party. It's so big.
Well, you'll all be sitting on the floor because there isn't any furniture there yet. So if you want to stand up and watch the soccer game, come on over.
Good soccer fans usually stand for the whole game, you know?
Well, good sports fans generally stand for the whole game.
Well,
I've never stood up for anything other than the national anthem, of course. And that, now does that come at the beginning or the end of the game? You'd think I'd know that, wouldn't you? Well, do they play the winning team's anthem at the end of a soccer game? I don't think they do. Do they?
I don't think they do right now. Well, anyway, I don't know.
If you play international hockey, they play the winning team's anthem after
at the end. Yeah.
If you win an Olympic medal, they play the winner's anthem at the end of the event.
Correct.
Well, why don't they do that with soccer?
Well, maybe they do, and you just don't pay attention because you click off so quickly.
Well, the only thing I remember is the last game, I guess Panama.
Yeah.
They had a near brawl at the end of the game, so I was paying attention to, and I don't remember them.
You just love violence in sports. That's the problem. You love violence in sports.
It was at least something was going on other than a bunch of people, you know, patting themselves on the back.
And exchanging jerseys.
Yeah, I guess
that happens a lot.
Well, it happens in international sport all the time.
Yeah.
Is there a rule against that in other professional sports?
No.
Like you occasionally see it.
Well, I mean, in the NFL, it's happened a lot this year in the NFL, actually. Guys swapping.
Really? Sweaters. I haven't seen one.
Yeah. I noticed early in the season, guys swapping uniforms. You don't see it on the ice very often because who knows? I can't say I would pay attention to it in basketball. So,
well, so if you were playing, would you want to swap jerseys with somebody?
Not a chance.
I don't want anybody else's jersey.
No.
You don't have a collection of jerseys by any chance, do you?
I do.
I do.
Oh, I do. But I don't wear them. I have about lots of people wear them, Bob. But I have about six.
Well, younger people.
No,
in your age group.
I tell you what, if you go watch a Winnipeg Jets game or a Seattle Kraken game or a Vegas Golden Knights game,
well, okay,
there are guys our age.
Yeah, if you're going to the game, people wear jerseys just as a thing. Yeah. I would never do that. I have never done that. I will never do that.
Yeah, you and I finally agree on something.
Well, so how many jerseys would you say you have? Do you have a closet full? Do you have any framed?
I have one framed right here, over here, yeah.
And what is that one?
Sydney.
Oh, Sid from where?
From Pittsburgh, his rookie. I have his rookie jersey, rookie sweater from his first year in the NHL.
Well,
It was a gift.
I have one from 2010 from the Olympics.
Yeah. I have about 60, I think, Bob.
Really?
But they're all packed away and they're all, you know, they're all collectibles. I have lots of them autographed. I got, when I was running things, because I don't run things anymore. When I was running things.
That goes without saying.
Yes. I don't even run the house anymore.
That is a for sure.
So, but I used to get them signed for my kids.
Sure.
And so they're all packed. Well, they got their names on
them. That was your story and you're sticking to it.
They got their names on them.
Well, yeah, because, you know, you say, I'd like a jersey for my kid because you're embarrassed to say it's for you. And so the player will always say, well, what's your kid's name? And you go, ah, crap. Now I got to give it to my kid.
No, In fact, I have one, and my son doesn't listen to the podcast anyway. I have one for him from Mark Messier, his Messier's first captain's jersey in New York, and it says "Happy 50th birthday, Jake." And so I got it.
Have to wait a while for that to be appropriate.
So it is bundled up nicely and tightly and hermetically sealed. So,
and you're hoping you'll still be around when that day comes, huh?
Oh, I intend to.
Oh, I know you intend to, but that doesn't mean you will.
I know. Okay.
I think I only have one jersey that's signed to me. I have a bunch of signed jerseys.
Yeah.
Well, not a lot, not nearly what you have, but when there was a rumor that Eric Lindros was going to play for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
The Maple Leaf, somebody sent you one?
Yeah, and he did ultimately, we know, but this was before. I don't know, a year or two before.
There, I remember that summer. I think he ended up going to Dallas.
Yeah, and Gord Kirk was, I don't know if he was Eric's agent or whether he was looking after his financials. He had some role in it. And apparently he said, now Kirk lies a lot, so he said that Eric signed three of them. Did three jerseys only.
And one was for you?
And one was for me. Said to Bob, says to Bob, you know, probably best wishes. I don't remember. And of course, in the middle of this chaos that I'm living in, I have no idea where it is.
The magnificent thing about players signing jerseys and sweaters normally is they don't really sign the sweater or the jerseys. They actually sign the numbers. So what you do is if you go down on autograph day, like they have a, in during training camp, they have an autograph day where there's tables and tables and tables set up. And what they have is not the sweaters set up. They just have the numbers.
Oh yeah.
So they have, you know, tables of Wendell Clark 17s and Wendell just sits there signing 100 number sevens, you know? So.
Now, do you know why they sign the number rather than the jersey?
Well, it's probably easier to do, and probably more efficient. I have no idea otherwise.
It's probably because the jerseys themselves, most of them, especially the, I mean, these are not the real jerseys.
Yeah.
They do have air holes in them.
And ask your buddy, ask your pal Aaronworth. He would know.
I'll ask him.
Yeah.
Get right on that. Would you like me to do that right now? Like suspend this?
No, podcast? I think we should start with the podcast now.
I'll pick up, you know, I have my phone here so I can.
Let's call Aaronworth right now. Let's go to our guest then.
Well, is our guest ready? Do we know if he's ready?
He's ready.
All right. So we're going to talk to Pat Brisson, who I was going to introduce at the top of this, but Shannon hijacked the entire conversation.
Yeah, because I want to sell tickets in Edmonton. I want people to talk soccer.
You don't have any idea how many tickets they've sold, do you?
No.
It'd be nice if you came with some information when you're going to raise a topic.
Let's get to the guest, okay? The guest is waiting.
Pat Brisson with CAA and one of the top agents in North America, hockey agents. And he now represents Jack Eichel and was at least in part responsible for or involved in the deal that sent Eichel from Buffalo to Vegas. And we'll talk to him about how he got Eichel because he just signed. He and Eichel just signed like 2 months before the deal was done.
Yeah.
So he is not the long-term agent. Nope. And we'll ask him about that, how it went and what's the prognosis for Mr. Eichel. We'll do that when we continue after these messages. Well, if he's not the top agent in hockey today, he's certainly one of them. Pat Brisson joins us. He's with CAA and now represents Jack Eichel. Good to see you. How you been?
Great. Great to see you, Bob. Good to see you, John.
Been a while since we chatted, but I want, you know, and obviously we want to spend a fair bit of time here talking about the Jack Eichel situation. But one of the more intriguing things was, I guess it was end of August that you actually forged a relationship, a formal relationship with Jack. Tell us a little bit about how does that happen? Does he contact you? Do you have an ongoing dialogue with him? How does that work?
Yeah, well, in this case, situation, I mean, we all know that Jack went through so much, prior to August 4th or whatever, 20th, when we met and all that. And I guess he was talking to a lot of people internally and friends and teammates and so on and so forth. And it happened that Jack reached out to me through mutual friends and people were recommending our practice and our help. And that's pretty much how it happened. I met Jack once before my career, just real quick, a handshake. And we didn't have a conversation. And that's pretty much how it started there in August.
So what kinds of dialogue takes place at the beginning of this? He says to you, I'd like you to represent me. He had been represented by the same couple of guys for some period of time, I guess.
Peter Fish was the number one guy, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I mean, his agreement with his previous agent had to have expired for you to talk to him, correct?
Yeah. He told me when he called me, he basically said that he's looking for a change, so to speak. And he had gone through a lot. You know, this is a pretty complicated file, a medical file that's pretty deep as well. No, we can talk about it. And the situation, the fact that Jack had asked for a trade before, there was so much going on. And he probably felt at that point that things were not going in a direction at the pace that he was hoping for. And his previous agents were doing a great job. I mean, I know I've been in that seat before. They did everything they could, in my opinion, at the time too. And sometimes a change is helpful. And in this case, Jack felt that, I and JP and us, we were in the appropriate group. It's never easy even for us coming in, because I respect the other people who put a lot of time, and this was a long-term relationship. And but I guess I've been through many, many complicated files before, along with JP, my partner, and our folks at CAA, and probably Jack felt that we were perhaps suited to help him get to where he wanted to get.
How long does it take you before you feel comfortable with the file? How long did it take?
This one took about 3 weeks, honestly, because I jumped in there and had to learn a lot about the fusion and the ADR and the different type of discs. I have no idea. Talking to a lot of doctors, the ones outside the box, so to speak, outside the NHL, NHLPA list, and some on the list. And a lot of research, a lot of meetings with the Sabres, with ownership. So, and getting to be comfortable with Jack as well, understanding Jack, what he was going through and everything else. And, I'm not to say that I was skeptical at the beginning regarding fusion versus ADR, but I had to educate myself pretty quick. So I'd say, John, 3 weeks to a good 3 weeks of, I mean, I'm talking about 4 to 5 hours minimum a day, minimum.
So those initial conversations with the Sabres, were you attempting to ascertain what their position was specifically? Like, were they adamant about this? Could they be talked out of it? What kinds of things were you talking about, Pat?
Yeah, well, first met with Kevin Adams on the road there somewhere in Chicago, I guess, the first time. And then the second meeting was actually with Mr. Pegula and Kevin and a few members of the organization as well. And my goal was to understand where they were coming from, first of all. Always understand what's going on the other side of the table and listen to them. And I did sense from the beginning that Mr. Pegula made a big investment in Jack and this contract and an 8-year deal. And he felt he really liked Jack as a player and as a person. And I felt that the fact that he had asked for a trade was probably, I mean, it hurt him. And then the perfect storm with the surgery, I mean, with the injury, it complicated everything. So I wanted to listen to what they were saying and where they were coming from. And immediately my recommendations was to try to help him get back on his feet. If he wants to go with the ADR, I thought it was a fine solution, and let him come back and rehab. And then as Jack indicated to me, he said, it's okay for me to come back and play for the Sabres and work with them in a potential trade at a later date. It could be this summer. It doesn't have to be now. Because it's not easy to move an asset like Jack, or a $10 cap hit in September or October, when most teams have no cap space. It's the hardest time of the year to move an asset, I would say. It's much harder than if you're in the middle of the summer and before the draft and all that. So, but I want to listen to them and where they were coming from, and met with their doctors, Dr. Bisson, Dr. Cappuccino. Bisson's the head doctor. Cappuccino is the spine surgeon. And really, really educated myself as fast as I could and listened to them more than anything.
You know, in talking with Terry and Kevin, do you feel at the end it was more than just a hockey thing? Do you think it was personal?
A little bit of personal, perhaps. There's emotions. I said personal, there's a lot of emotions. I mean, also Jack felt attached to Buffalo as well. He was clear with that, the fans and the people. He didn't want to hurt anyone. He sure felt for what the Pegulas felt as well, and the investment in the franchise. He was very, very logical with that. But at the same time, here's a player or person who's going through a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Medical attention needed to be, because there's pressure on the spinal cord. We're not talking 3 or 4 or 5 months. It became 7 months towards the end. So the emotions were kicking in on both sides, because it's a medical.
Sure.
More importantly,
it should be noted, Bob, that we're doing this show on Thursday the 11th, and Jack's surgery is Friday the 12th, tomorrow in Denver. Correct, Pat?
Yeah. It's in Denver with Dr. Prozmak.
So in these conversations that you're having with the Buffalo people in the early stages of your relationship with Jack Eichel, it became clear to you, I guess, that there was a, everybody kind of had their feet in concrete, really, on what they wanted to do. There was not going to be any negotiation, discussion, or effective discussion as to what kind of procedure ultimately was going to take place. Is that accurate?
It's pretty accurate. I mean, at the beginning, I wanted to see if it was a possibility for them to reconsider the artificial disc replacement. And it was very clear when I met Dr. Bisson and Dr. Cappuccino, there was a no-go at all, no-go, not even 1%. So at that point, it was very clear to me that the trade was imminent. I mean, that was what that needed to happen, because there's a section in the CBA, section 34.5, where a team has the last say on the type of procedure that a player could have, whether it's an ACL or labor thay or whatever. And we've never had to deal with it, so to speak, because usually you have a second opinion or third opinion. And at the end of the day, we work it all out. But this was a really unique case, because the ADR will be the first case in the National Hockey League where a player gets a disc replacement versus a fusion. So they were adamant about not going that route. So I made it clear to them, well, the only way for Jack, since you're not going to endorse the surgery of his choice, then we got to find a team that's willing to go that route. And so we had to speak with teams, team doctors. I was uploading, my assistant was uploading MRIs left and right and CAT scans, and with many, many different team doctors and different opinions. And so that's what we had to do, because it became a medical trade file. You know, I had to have a team that was susceptible to not only have the cap space and all that, but also be willing to treat right away, which became even more complicated.
Yeah.
So just curiously, you were actively involved in the process of talking with other teams, that you were given permission to do that by the Sabres? And is that normal?
It is normal at times if you do have permissions. I mean, I had permissions, I had certain boundaries. You know, I wasn't discussing these teams, anything about the trade, the player.
Right, right.
I stayed away from that. If Kevin felt comfortable telling me a few things, which he did a little bit here and there, but I didn't focus there. That wasn't for me. It was more, I had permission to speak with teams about the medical file, because Jack is Jack's medical file. On behalf of Jack, he gave me permission. I have all the MRIs discs. I have about 6 or 7 discs here that we were, annually, we were allowed to do that part. And on the medical side of things, which educated myself a lot about the spine, that's for sure. How important.
So how quickly did the Vegas side come into effect? How quick was that?
I think Vegas was in the summer with a bunch of teams. There were probably about 10 teams involved this summer, and I wasn't privileged to these conversations, but Vegas was in there, and there were about 10 teams, if not more at that time, who were talking with Kevin in July or so. But when I came in, the list shrunk pretty quick because of the timing of it. Two reasons. I mean, this summer, a lot of teams did not have access to the file as much, the medical file. And I made it available as much as possible in order to make this trade happen. Without that, it wouldn't have happened.
Were there teams, Pat, that had a reluctance to proceed with discussions because they believed that the medical procedure proposed by the Buffalo Sabres was the preferable one?
Yeah, there were teams who clearly decided to stay away, decided not to further investigate. I would say they stayed at the surface. I can call it the surface. And other teams decided to dive in a little deeper. And for the moment, ones who decided to dive a little deeper, they became candidates pretty quick. It seemed to me that they realized that this is a really good surgery. Not in the fact that it didn't occur yet for a hockey player. It's been in the NHL, because it's happened with many, many players in Europe, surfers, motocross driver. I mean, there's so many, physical sports that the ADR is the way to go. And but it hasn't occurred in hockey yet with the NHL. So some teams stayed away just by, I guess, precaution, or they didn't want to dive deeper.
I know you're not a physician, but obviously you.
We're going to start calling him Dr. Brisson the way he's talking here. So
well, but you spent a lot of time obviously on this file and got to know a fair bit about it. A lot more, I'm sure, than our audience and John and I even. How would you define the difference between the two procedures in terms of risk and recovery time?
Yeah, well, first of all, the injury is at C5 and C6. It's a disc who's herniated. He has an herniated disc, pretty pronounced, and that put pressures on the spinal cord. Usually there's a few different ways to resolve it. You can do a conservative therapy for a while and see. Sometimes it goes the right way, and that's what he tried.
Yeah. Right?
But the two main ways to deal with it is the fusion and the ADR, the artificial disc replacement. So the fusion, from what I understand, they're fusing. In this case, it would be fusing C5 and C6 together. And it comes with those screws. And what happens, though, it would probably create some pressure, a little bit of pressure. The issue with Jack is it creates pressure on C4 and C7. And eventually, since he's 25 years old, he wants to play hopefully another 10, 15 years. He felt that if it was a fuse, he might have had to, get another surgery sooner or later. And besides, there are a lot of research that, takes that, as an athlete, especially where you feel and where you are in space with a fusion is way different than the ADR, because the ADR, you're technically just replacing the disc and you have a lot more movement, range of motion. And there's a lot of work to do with the vestibular work, which is where you sense, where you are in time and space, especially for an athlete. You need to be in a 98 to 100 percentile in order to be an elite player. So the difference in the recovery is the fusion, based on the doctors that were saying, it takes 6 to 8 months. It could be about 8 months, could be even longer. The ADR, we're talking about 3 to 4 months. I'm not putting an ETA on the timeline on this, but I would say no more than 4 months based on all the discussions we've had. And it's an outpatient. I mean, Jack, apparently it's an hour surgery, an hour and 15 minute surgery, and he could be out the same night, and he could be technically working out in 3 weeks. In a month and a half, he could even be a month and a half, he could be skating with no contacts and no obviously bad falls. So it all depends how the bone's gonna regenerate around the disc itself and how solid it's gonna be. But the fact that he's a young person, very healthy, he should recover much faster.
How much a factor is his age when you consider the difference between the fusion and the ADR? Is that a big factor?
Big factor, in my opinion, because he wants to continue to play the game that he loves. There's a better chance that he could, and you can always replace the disc again. Worst case scenario, he can replace the disc again, and you can have a fusion eventually if it gets to that. In the worst case scenario, but if you have a fusion, you can't get a disc replacement. Right. You can. Age wise, yeah, it's a good question, John, because of it. He's very healthy. And the healing part of this, apparently how the bone reconnects, so to speak, around the prosthesis is very, very important. And also the timeline in terms of how long he wants to play this game. Now, there's been a lot of athletes with fusions, but they're usually in their 30s.
Right.
Well, Tiger Woods, among them, had a fusion operation on the discs. I don't know how relatable that is to what Eichel has. What has he been doing all these months? What has he been able to do? And I ask that as a precursor to, I guess, a second question here, Pat, and that is, if he hasn't been extremely active, hasn't been on skates, hasn't been working out, you'd have to project the recovery period and the preparation to go back on the ice is going to be longer even than maybe a normal situation. What's he been doing?
Yeah, ironically, he's been working hard this summer. He worked with Andy O'Brien, and he went to a Montreal camp, the BioSteel camp, and he was skating very well there. He didn't participate in any contact drills or games for that matter, but he was skating very well. He trained very well, very hard as he was working on his recovery. So probably the hardest summer he's ever worked on, on his body. So his body probably took the last few weeks kind of lighter, I would say in terms of training, but his training has been at a high level, but no contact. So he's able to do a lot. The difference is he had numbness, in his arms and all that. When you have issues with your when you've herniated disc, have symptoms, and your neck symptoms when you sleep or you can't, apparently, we have headaches and things like that, but he trained hard, and he was getting a lot of treatments also, not only around the spine, but the rest of the body, because you compensate at one point if you have issues in one part of your body. So he's ready for that. From a conditioning standpoint, his recovery, I think, will be much better because he's ready. He's in not game shape, but he was almost in game shape at one point. Actually, a couple of months ago, he was right there.
Actually, I was a little concerned the other night. He went to the home game in Vegas, and they have him cranking up the siren. I was a little worried about.
Well, it's funny you're saying this because when he told me he was going to do this that night, I thought the same thing. The physique. But one of the things I guess you can still do, with an herniated disc, is just the discomfort and the pain, and it's I didn't ask him if it hurt.
We're with Pat Brisson, who represents, among many others, Jack Eichel. And we'll take a quick pause and come back with more after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon on the podcast and on Sirius XM. And Pat Brisson is with us from CAA, who represents Jack Eichel.
By the way, so, if you ever want to read a book about it, an agency, James Miller's book about CAA
was fantastic.
Is about 1,000 pages. Pat's mentioned in it at about page number 900. but it is it's the story of Michael Ovitz and how he created CAA. Yep. It is one of the great books of all time. And Pat and I have talked about it a couple of times because I just can't get enough of it. So,
well, I've read it. I have it here somewhere. And I agree 100%. Yeah. I got it just before it was published. It was sent to me, and I don't think I've read a book faster than I read that one. I can tell you, it's fascinating. So it winds up being Vegas. You don't have real choice in the matter, or did you have choice in the matter, you and Jack?
At the end of the day, no. I mean, we could have pushed the file in different ways if we didn't like where the destination. Actually, Jack was very excited about when Vegas, his name came up. That's one of the first destinations that he was dreaming about. Mm-hmm. There's always ways we can always interfere a little bit, so to speak, in order to discourage a team from going forward. But since my client wanted to go, since Jack, this is what he wanted to do. And also I felt that on the medical side of things, they were very open and they were very embracing all the above. It made a lot of sense. So I didn't have much to do other than continue to channel the move towards Vegas as much as possible and all the abilities that I had and all, because we had conversations on a day-to-day basis. I was talking to Kevin Adams probably at least 4 to 5 times a day.
Wow. Yeah.
Hey, do you have any more questions on Eichel, Bob? Just because.
Well, the tax implications in Nevada are fairly significant for your client. And that would be a factor. But I would think also, based upon what he said, the situation in Buffalo since he's been there, it has not been a competitive team. This Vegas team has been competitive right out of the chute. We all know that. Their owner has, I guess, done a magnificent job of saying, here's the money, go do what you need to do. And the management team has essentially executed. What were the key factors for your client in Vegas? I mean, obviously, some of it was economic. Maybe some of it was the excitement of living in Vegas, which I have done. But some of it had to be the fact that this is an organization that seems absolutely committed to doing whatever they have to do to try and win.
Yeah, for Jack, it was about the organization more than anything. We never discussed taxes or I mean, the city itself a little bit. You know, he played in that building a few times. Everyone that goes there, every player's, whether you're on the team or you're playing against the Golden Knights, I mean, it's an exciting place to play. So everyone knows it by now. But it was more about the organization, where they're going and the types of players that they have and their goal, the immediate goals and where they're at with their assets, the pieces that they have. He was extremely excited about that. And my feedback, based on the conversations that I was having with Kelly on a day-to-day basis, he felt more and more intrigued and excited about Vegas. That was a no-brainer right there.
One of the intriguing things about excuse me, Vegas is I don't have any idea what the stats are, but a pretty high percentage of the players that have gone to play there have actually moved there, have bought houses there. So it has become more than just a 9 month a year place to go. And then you go back to where you came from or go to the cottage or whatever else. Do you know what Jack's plans are?
Yeah. I mean, he's been there for 4 days now. He's excited. We talk about a few things. He went to look at a few houses. I mean, the little city of Summerlin, which is about 20 minutes from the strip, is the place to live for players. They have everything there. And to your point, Bob, a lot of players are moving there. It's a great place to live. There's a lot to do. It's a fairly new town if we look at it. It's very well. You have everything that you want there. If you're too hot, you just, you know, get on the plane and or drive 3 hours or 2 hours and you get a little of a cooler towards California. So, which is not that cold either, but, you know.
Well, I lived in Summerlin actually myself, and just tell him if he wants to cool off in the middle of the summertime, he could go about a 35, 40 minute drive up to Mount Charleston, and you're at elevation, and that's all it takes. And then you're, you know, if it's 100 degrees in the city, it's 70 there. So you don't have to go that far.
Yeah.
Hey, John, so you wanted to jump in.
So we have a lot of listeners in Vancouver, the loyal listeners, full transparency. I've been trying to get Pat on the podcast for 3 months.
Yeah.
And every time he says, let me and JP get Quinn and Elias done first. Let us get those two contracts in Vancouver done first. How would you describe that process of trying to get two elite players signed at the same time with one team?
Yeah, that was interesting as well, because we've done it before with players, you know, like Kane and Taves or Crosby, Malkin, but Kane and Taves were at the same time with Elias and Quinn. You talk about defenseman and the forward. You have a player who's a 10-2C in Jack Quinn Hughes. There's so many uses now. Quinn.
Yes.
And Quinn didn't have the same rights. You know, Elias was he could have been offered sheeted. So strategically, we weren't going to sign one before the other, because if we signed, we were fine signing, Elias first, but Vancouver wasn't going to do. You know, they want to make sure that they weren't signing Quinn first and then expose Elias to an offer sheet. So they want to sign Elias first in order to make sure they don't pigeonhole themselves. So it was a lot of conversations about that, because at one point we were maybe closer on one player than the other.
Right.
But we made sure that we didn't want to us sign Quinn first, you know, and we keep leverage with Elias, you know.
How realistic was an offer sheet, particularly after what happened in Montreal with Cocky Manny?
You know what? If Quinn had signed first, their cap space was really, really, really tight at the time, and it could have been an offer sheet. I've had a couple conversations with teams that were interested, and they were watching it closely. So I would say that if Quinn signed first, and if Vancouver had, you know, 9 or 10 million left in cap space, they might have been squeezed. So, but the intention was to re-sign there for us, and we were talking. What I hate about this process sometimes too is it's a process. You know where you're going to be in the end of the day. At the end of the day, why don't you do it in August or early September? And if you look at all these, most of these deals have been done during camp. If you look at the history, that's been 90% of these deals are done during camp, unfortunately.
And why do you think that is?
I guess the pressure points, you know, camp started and it's starting. So you got the coaches and the GMs and everyone around in the rink in those meetings, and players are returning. Players are asking, hey, you know, when is so-and-so back? And then you're getting ready for the season. So as it's more serious, it's much, the conversations have a lot more meat around that time than the middle of July. That's for sure. Beginning of August for some reason. Although a lot of times we're ready to go. We want to get going, but we feel that the leverage isn't there, or you feel that it's not going to get to where you should be. So therefore you might as well wait, you know?
Yeah. I don't want to interrupt you, John. Did you have some other
something
else you wanted to address?
The one thing, those of you that are watching the podcast, you'll see that Michigan hat over Pat's shoulder. I want to know what is more difficult, being an agent of Jack Eichel or Quinn Hughes or Elias Pettersson, or being the father of a first round draft pick?
Well, you know, the emotions are always there when you're a father. You know, I tell a lot of parents, I broke remote controls like you guys, and I watch games no different than any other fathers, and I have to contain myself sometimes too. So, yeah, no, we're proud of what Brendan's accomplished, and watch the games no different than a dad. It's some, you know, I have to just wear a different hat when it comes to being the agent, even to my own son. Sometimes he listens to me, sometimes he doesn't.
So will you, just out of curiosity, will you represent Brendan, or will you have JP do it?
You know, JP might have to step in there at one time. The entry-level contract shouldn't be that complicated. Whatever is best for Brendan, he's going to make that decision.
That's a pretty good hockey team he's on. I think they're number two in the nation. Mel Pearson's his biggest problem is he's got too many first-round picks to have to play at the same time.
It's a good point. I mean, I guess he's got 7 or 8 first rounders. It's, you know, the high octane young, you know, players who are expecting to do very well. And so they want to be all on the ice at the same time. They all want the puck. So it's going to be an art to manage that. So, and teams are playing them hard, as they should, because, you know, they're a young team and they're only in the draft and all that. But when they play the older teams with a lot of experience, they're physical and they're wow. So now it's a fun team to watch. And more importantly, I mean, live, it's great. I mean, last year we went during COVID, only the parents were allowed to go, and we were about 20 people in the stands. And now this year has been fantastic.
Yeah. But you know, there's the 6 degrees of separation, not Kevin Bacon of Pat Brisson, because your son's playing with Owen Power, who is the first round pick of the Buffalo Sabres. And then you represent the guy you got traded from the Buffalo Sabres to go to Vegas, and Brendan's a Vegas pick. So, I mean, it all kind of fits big together, loop, dovetails.
Huh? No, it's interesting. I was sure things that goes through your mind as you're doing this and the pieces that are going one way or the other. I mean, you know, Brendan could have been in that, you know, who knows? I mean, this is professional hockey. So, it's not midget hockey where you control a lot more what's going on.
Well, I certainly respect and understand the Michigan hat there. I noticed it earlier. I wasn't going to make reference to it because, over here is an Ohio State logo on the wall.
Yeah.
And, you know, Buckeye fans and Michigan fans don't usually see eye to eye. So, and I'm sure you've experienced that already. Probably not quite as much in hockey as in football, but that game is coming up in a couple of weeks too. Let me just ask you this before we let you go. You know, when you're an agent, you're obviously a friend, you're a confidant, almost like a priest to the player. I mean, he's the guy who calls when. Not just for financial advice, not just for contractual advice, but just sometimes when he needs to talk about something. You know, you mentioned Kane and Taves and we know what the Blackhawks are going through right now. When a player on a team is experiencing that, how much more time do you spend on the phone with those players?
Yeah, I mean, you talk about Patrick and John here in this case. I mean, sure, we reached out and see how they were about the whole situation. And there's certain cases, without mentioning any, that you spend a lot more time, for instance, than this one. You always want to make yourself available. You want to want
all sure.
that you're there. You said it right, Bob. I mean, the contract and the financial part of our business, a lot of times it's 10% of what we do. We're sports psychologists. We're psychologists. We have to have a medical, almost not a medical background, but we have to educate ourselves, and we're confident. I think now with health issues, mental health issues, it's the biggest part of the game. There's so much pressure on these young players to do well, and they want instant gratification because they see on social media, you know, Instagram is great, but everyone feels good on Instagram. And after games, if you don't have a good game, a good performance, or a few not good performances, you know, in a row, there's so much pressure on these young men. So we spend more time than ever there for them. And as I grow older now, I'm a father, I understand things way better than I did 20 years ago, and we all do. So I can use that experience to calm things down as much as possible and put things in perspective. And first and foremost, be a good human, be a good person, help others around you. Like put things in perspective, because hockey is a game. I know it's work. There's pressure, but we have so many buckets that we have to deal
with. Oh, yeah.
How many hours in a day? I mean, how many hours in a day work? I mean, how much do you ever sleep?
It's, that's the one thing I'm pretty good about health. I try to, you know, find my 7 or 8 hours sleep and recover. Because I do focus on recovery, no different than an athlete. And that's what I tell my players. And I take my saunas and I take my cold bath and stuff to focus. And because you have to be focused what you do also. I have a task list on a day-to-day basis, but it changes all the time because we do get last-minute calls and we have to be there for players. But when people say, oh, summertime after your contracts are done, you're on vacation. I mean, guys, I don't know if I'm doing it the right way, but I'm always busy. There's always something.
We thank you for sure for taking some time for us today. As John said earlier, we've been hoping to have this conversation for some time. We're glad we finally did, and hopefully we'll have the opportunity to do it again somewhere down the road. Continued success, Pat, and we thank you again for joining us today.
So much, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you for inviting me. Appreciate it.
Pat Brisson, we'll come back after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon back with you. Thanks again to Pat Brisson. Always a pleasure to talk to him. Smart guy. And yeah. One of the best agents in the business. On the ice and on the court last night, win and a loss for the Toronto teams. The Maple Leafs, well, a decent performance. I mean, bouncing back from a disappointing effort in their last game, beat Philadelphia 3-0. What's this Philadelphia team like?
You know what? In many ways, the frustrations of Philadelphia hockey fans parallel the frustrations of Maple Leaf fans.
They do. You're right.
Yeah, and
not quite as long, but.
Well, 1974 or 75.
Well, that's
two Stanley Cups for Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So that's only 7 years, Bob.
I guess.
So, and they've paid a lot of money for a lot of players over the years. And, you know, their biggest issue for the longest time has been they've never had a goaltender. Good players, but bad goaltending, like for the longest
time. Since the 70s, really.
Well, since Pelle Lindbergh was killed in a car accident.
Yeah.
You know, in 1981. So they've really had issues there. And the frustrations, if you talk to Flyer fans and they'll talk about certain things, it's identical to Maple Leaf fans and their frustrations.
Yeah. Maple Leafs win 3-0.
And your basketball team.
Well, how interesting. Pascal Siakam comes back, and this team that seemed to be on a roll suddenly looks slightly confused.
Yeah.
And I must tell you, I quite expected this. I was hoping it wouldn't happen. But the notion that you can inject a big personality and a guy, well, he's the highest paid player on the Raptors and has to have the ball at least some of the time. It can be difficult. And it has been difficult for the Raptors since Pascal's come back.
Well, and I'm not sure he's going to play the next game. I think he's there's a little question mark whether he's going to play or not now. So from that perspective.
Well, from a health perspective.
Yes. Yes.
But, you know, the integration of a guy of that magnitude is not always as easy as you anticipate it's going to be.
I would tell you that Nick Nurse, this we've talked about how good a coach Nick Nurse is. If Nick Nurse gets this team to the playoffs, it will be his greatest coaching ever, ever.
Well, maybe.
Yes. No.
I'll tell you the thing that concerns me. I mean, we'll get into this in some depth on another program, I'm sure. But he has a real short bench. And I understand why, because he's trying to win every game. But, you know, this is an era in which minutes played, games off are all part of the discussion on mm-hmm. a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you got to go a little deeper with that bench, and you got to leave that bench out there no matter what happens.
Well, what's interesting too is teams like Boston, who they lost to, seem to have turned it around quicker than the Raptors have now. And that's got to be a concern. You can't make the playoffs in November, but you can get knocked out of the playoffs. You can play yourselves out in a certain situation at this time of year, even in the NBA.
I get it. I mean, we're not at that point of discussing that. You know, they're 500, I think, now.
Yep, 6-6.
Yeah, so, you know, not horrible, although they've lost three in a row. That'll do it for us. Another show for you tomorrow, we think.
Glenn Healy.
Ah. The bagpipe playing Glenn Healy will join us without the bagpipes, we hope, tomorrow. Until then.
Maybe we need the bagpipes.
I'd be more interested to see you play the bagpipes.
There's not a chance.
Or try.
No.
For Shannon McCowan, we'll see you.